Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
These are considered crimes against humanity and war crimes. The international community must intervene to stop and compel Israel to respect international conventions and the rules of international humanitarian law, which prohibit the targeting of providers of health services and ambulances during war and conflict.
Outrage grows over Israel's killing of 15 Palestinian medics and emergency workers in Gaza. Footage shows ambulances had their lights on when Israeli troops opened fire. Israel initially claimed the convoy had suspiciously approached them in the dark. The medics and ambulances were buried in a mass grave. Amidst protests calling for accountability, we'll speak with Palestinian human rights attorney Diana Bhutu. Her new piece headlined Point Blank Range, How Israel Executed 15 Medics and Rescue Workers in Gaza. Then to the voices of mass protests around the world Saturday, as hundreds of thousands told President Trump and billionaire Elon Musk hands off.
I think it's important to speak up. I think silence is not an option. I think you have to stay engaged. You have to stay vigilant. I think it's not only for our community at large, but the world at large.
And we're also demanding the release of the students who have been taken off the streets, abducted, and jailed simply for standing with the Palestinian people.
And we'll look at the impact of Trump's tariffs on heavily indebted countries in the global south. We'll go to New Delhi, India. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Over a million people took to the streets Saturday in the largest protest since President Trump returned to the White House. More than 1,400 demonstrations under the banner of Hands Off took place across all 50 states, as well as in countries across the world. In the United States, organizers said turnout was far higher than expected. Some of the largest protests were held in Washington, D.C., New York, Chicago, Los Angeles, Denver, Boston, Philadelphia, and Atlanta. In D.C., speakers included Democratic Congressmember Ilhan Omar of Minnesota.
We are currently living through a president who wants to be a dictator. In America, we do not accept dictators and we do not accept kings. We have a billionaire who has bought a seat next to the president, using him as a puppet. American democracy has never been for sale, and it won't be today.
Anu Gujoshi of American Civil Liberties Union also spoke at the hands-off rally in Washington.
The unconscionable and unconstitutional arrests of international students and scholars should alarm every one of us. ICE has illegally snatched people from their homes and neighborhoods, threatened their legal status, and sent them across the country with no notice to their loved ones or their lawyers. Whoa. All of this in direct retaliation for constitutionally protected speech. The government cannot punish us because they don't like what we say.
In Washington, D.C., thousands also took part in a Stop the Genocide rally to protest U.S. support for Israel's war in Gaza. This all came as President Trump spent another weekend golfing in Florida. We'll hear more voices from the protests later in the broadcast. Global stocks are continuing to fall, and fears of a recession are growing after Donald Trump rejected calls to scale back his order to institute sweeping tariffs on most of the world. In Hong Kong, stocks fell today by 13%, the biggest single-day drop since the 1997 Asian financial crisis. Taiwan's main stock index had its worst day since 1990. On Wall Street, $6.6 trillion was wiped out Thursday and Friday. Trump's defending his tariffs plan, telling reporters, quote, sometimes you have to take medicine to fix something, unquote. But there appears to be growing divisions within the Trump administration over the tariff plan. Trump's billionaire advisor, Elon Musk, the world's richest man, says he wants to see the U.S. and Europe have zero tariffs. Musk has also publicly criticized Trump trade advisor Peter Navarro. Another billionaire Trump backer, Bill Ackman, has warned Trump's tariffs could lead to an economic nuclear winter. We'll have more on this story later in the broadcast. In Gaza, Israel's killed at least 56 Palestinians over the past 24 hours as Israel expands its ground invasion. Overnight, Israel struck a tent housing journalists near Nasser Hospital in Khan Yunis. The blast set off a fire that killed two people, including the journalist Helmi Al-Fakawi, who was burned alive. Another journalist, Hassan Eslaya, was seriously wounded in the attack. Meanwhile, outrage is growing over Israel's killing of 15 Palestinian medics and emergency workers in Gaza, who were discovered in an unmarked mass grave last week. Footage recovered of the attack show the ambulances and the convoy had their lights on when Israeli troops opened fire. Israel initially claimed the convoy had suspiciously approached the troops with their lights off. On Saturday, the longtime Palestinian politician and Dr. Mustafa Barghouti marched in a protest in Ramallah in the occupied West Bank.
The Israeli army committed a terrible war crime by attacking first aid providers and medics in the Red Crescent Society while they were in their ambulances, clearly marked with their sirens on, with their lights on. Nevertheless, they attacked them and killed them one after the other. And after killing them, and maybe some of them were still wounded, they buried them with sand, they and their ambulances. What the Israeli army did in Rafah, and that's what New York Times have exposed, was a terrible war crime.
In other news from Gaza, health officials are warning at least 600,000 children in Gaza are at risk of permanent paralysis because Israel's barring the entry of polio vaccines to Gaza as part of its broader blockade. According to the UN relief agency UNRWA, Israeli attacks have killed or injured at least 100 children in Gaza every day since Israel broke the ceasefire in mid-March. This comes as President Trump's hosting Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu at the White House today. Netanyahu took a longer-than-usual flight path from Hungary to avoid flying over countries, including Ireland and Iceland, that might enforce an arrest warrant from the International Criminal Court if the plane had to make an emergency landing. In the occupied West Bank, Israeli soldiers have shot dead a 14-year-old Palestinian-American boy named Omar Mohammed Rabia during a raid near the town of Tremesaya. Two other Palestinian-American boys, age 14 and 15, were injured. The Palestinian Foreign Ministry condemned what it called the extrajudicial killing of the boy, who is a U.S. citizen. Israel acknowledged shooting the boys, who they accused of throwing rocks. Meanwhile, Reuters is reporting the Trump administration's moving forward with a plan to send 20,000 assault rifles to Israel. The Biden administration had paused the shipment out of fear the guns could end up in the hands of violent Israeli settlers. The UK's foreign secretary condemned Israel's refusal to allow entry to two members of the British Parliament as, quote, unacceptable, counterproductive and deeply concerning, unquote. The two Labour lawmakers, Yuen Yang and Abtissam Mohammed, arrived back in London after being deported from Israel on Sunday. They've been planning to visit aid projects in the occupied West Bank as part of a British parliamentary delegation. Israel accused the lawmakers of planning to document Israeli security forces and supporting boycotts and sanctions against Israel and Israeli officials. In Burma, which is also known as Myanmar, heavy rains and winds this week are expected to disrupt rescue and relief operations as many people continue to sleep in open air after losing their homes in the March 28th earthquake. The death toll has topped 3,500 people. Over 5,000 have been injured. In Mandalay, residents say they're still awaiting assistance from the military government after areas were wiped out by a fire that was triggered by the earthquake.
The fireball emerged from the ground immediately just after the earthquake. It was a big fire. There were barely minutes between the earthquake and the fire. The fire spread out across the district and wiped out all 400 houses. Everybody ran away and now nothing remains. We are in deep trouble.
Meanwhile, the Trump administration reportedly fired the three USAID officials it sent to Burma following the earthquake while they were in Mandalay to assess the situation. It's part of President Trump and Elon Musk's plan to completely dismantle USAID. A Russian attack on Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky's hometown of Kryvyi Rih killed at least 19 people, including 9 children, including some who were at a playground. Over 70 people were injured. The UN's top human rights official, Volker Türk, condemned what he called Russia's, quote, reckless disregard for civil life, unquote. The Russian Defense Ministry claimed the strike targeted a meeting of unit commanders and Western instructors. Zelensky criticized Russia again for not agreeing to an unconditional ceasefire.
Ukraine has accepted the American proposal, the proposal of a full unconditional ceasefire. Putin has rejected it. We are waiting for the U.S. reaction. So far, there has been none.
In the Democratic Republic of the Congo, severe flooding has killed at least 33 people in the capital, Kinshasa, destroyed homes and roads. This comes as the east of the country suffering worsening security and humanitarian crises as M23 fighters have advanced in north and south Kivu provinces. Some 7,000 people have been killed, millions have been forced to flee their homes in recent months. A Trump administration official said last week the U.S. and the DRC are nearing a deal that would allow U.S. companies to exploit Congo's reserves of valuable minerals, including cobalt and lithium, in exchange for providing security. The U.S. is continuing to carry out airstrikes on Yemen. On Sunday, Yemeni health officials said at least 4 people were killed in a U.S. strike on a home in Sana'a. More than 20 people were injured, including women and children. Meanwhile, President Trump posted a video online of an earlier U.S. strike in Yemen. The video shows a blast hitting over 70 people standing in an oval formation. Trump claimed the people targeted were Houthis preparing to carry out an attack. But according to reports in Yemen, the blast actually hit a tribal gathering to celebrate Eid al-Fitr, the end of Ramadan. The Trump administration's launched near-daily attacks on Yemen since mid-March, when the Houthis resumed attacks on ships in the Red Sea and the Gulf of Aden in solidarity with Palestinians in Gaza. A federal judge has accused the Trump administration of committing a grievous error that shocks the conscience by expelling Kilmer Abrego Garcia, a Maryland father, to a notorious prison in El Salvador, even though the man was under a court order not to be sent back to El Salvador. In a ruling on Sunday, federal judge Paula Chinis wrote, quote, defendant seized Abrego Garcia without any lawful authority, held him in 3 separate domestic detention centers without legal basis, failed to present him to any immigration judge or officer, and forcibly transported him to El Salvador in direct contravention of the Immigration and Nationality Act, unquote. Judge Chinis has ordered the Trump administration to bring him back by midnight tonight. On Friday, Abrego Garcia's wife, Jennifer Vasquez Sura, spoke briefly to the press in Maryland.
I want to say thank you to everyone that has helped us, that has supported us in fighting this, and we will continue fighting for Kilmer, for my husband. Thank you.
The Trump administration is now claiming there's nothing it can do to bring Kilmer Abrego Garcia back home. Meanwhile, the Justice Department has placed a senior immigration lawyer on indefinite leave after he acknowledged in court Friday the Trump administration had made a mistake in sending Abrego Garcia back to El Salvador. The lawyer, Erez Riveni, had worked for the Justice Department for 15 years. Secretary of State Marco Rubio says the U.S. is revoking all visas held by South Sudanese nationals in response to the government of South Sudan not accepting citizens recently removed from the U.S. The U.S. will also stop issuing visas for South Sudanese passport holders. A number of citizens of South Sudan are currently in the U.S. under temporary protected status, but this is set to expire May 3rd. This comes as many fear South Sudan may on the cusp of a new civil war as a power-sharing deal between government rivals recently collapse, and the first president, Riek Machar, remains under house arrest. In other immigration news, a Chinese woman has died by suicide at a Border Patrol station in Yuma, Arizona, after she was detained for overstaying her visa. Democratic Congressmember Pramila Jayapal of Washington blasted the Border Patrol amidst reports the agents failed to conduct welfare checks on the woman. The Trump administration's escalating its targeting of international university students in recent days. U.S. Department of Homeland Security revoked visas for a number of students and recent graduates at the University of Michigan, University of California, Berkeley, Stanford, UMass Amherst, Harvard, Arizona State University, Colorado State University, and the University of Colorado and other schools. Meanwhile, the Trump administration is threatening to pause $510 million in federal funding from Brown University. Days of major storms and flooding have killed at least 18 people across southern and midwestern U.S. states, with the highest number of deaths recorded in Tennessee. Other hard-hit states include Kentucky, Arkansas, Ohio, Missouri, Mississippi, and Alabama. The deadly storms come as the National Weather Service has become severely understaffed following cuts by the Trump administration. In environmental news, on Thursday, the Trump administration removed federal protections for over half the land managed by the U.S. Forest Service, opening vast areas up to logging. Health Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. attended the West Texas funeral Sunday of an 8-year-old girl who died of measles. She was not vaccinated and is the second known measles death in Texas amid the current outbreak. Texas has reported over 480 cases, many of them affecting members of the Mennonite community, which has lower rates of vaccination than the general public. During his visit to the epicenter of the outbreak, RFK Jr. posted on social media, quote, "The most effective way to prevent the spread of measles is the MMR vaccine," unquote. It's his most direct comments on the vaccine yet, even as he continues to also promote unproven treatments, including vitamin A. And the director of the National Museum of African American History and Culture left his post Friday. Kevin Young had led the groundbreaking Washington, D.C. institution since 2021 and comes amidst Trump's campaign to completely overhaul the Smithsonian and its landmark museums and cultural institutions. Last month, Trump issued an executive order accusing the Smithsonian of promoting a, quote, divisive, race-centered ideology. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. For the second time since January, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is in Washington, D.C. today to meet with President Trump as Israel expands its ground invasion of Gaza. According to the U.N. relief agency, UNRWA, Israeli attacks have killed or injured at least 100 children in Gaza every day since Israel broke the ceasefire in mid-March. This comes as Israel has killed at least 56 Palestinians over the past 24 hours. Overnight, Israel struck a tent housing journalists near Nasser Hospital in Khan Yunis. The blast set off a fire that killed two people, including the journalist Helmi Al-Fakawi, who was burned alive. Another journalist, Hassan Eslaya, was seriously wounded in the attack. Meanwhile, outrage is growing over Israel's killing of 15 Palestinian medics and emergency workers in Gaza who were discovered in an unmarked mass grave last week. Footage recovered of the attack shows the ambulances in the convoy had their lights on when Israeli troops opened fire. Israel had initially claimed the convoy had suspiciously approached the troops with their lights off. Cell phone video of Israel's attack was recorded by a paramedic who was inside the vehicle when it came under fire, was among the 15 aid workers who were killed. Of gunfire from Israeli soldiers. An Israeli military spokesperson said in a statement that its troops, quote, did not randomly attack an ambulance on March 23rd, and that, quote, following an initial assessment, it was determined the forces had eliminated Hamas military operative Ibrahim Shubaki, who took part in the October 7th massacre, along with eight other terrorists from Hamas and the Islamic Jihad, they said. Well, on Saturday, The longtime Palestinian politician and Dr. Mustafa Barghouti marched in a protest in Ramallah.
The Israeli army committed a terrible war crime by attacking first aid providers and medics in the Red Crescent Society while they were in their ambulances, clearly marked with their sirens on, with their lights on. Nevertheless, they attacked them and killed them one after the other. And after killing them, and maybe some of them were still wounded, they buried them with sand, they and their ambulances. What the Israeli army did in Rafah, and that's what New York Times have exposed, was a terrible war crime.
The UN Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs said the people were buried in a mass grave, with the ambulance also buried. Some of their bodies were found with their hands or legs tied and had gunshot wounds to the head and chest. This is Palestine Red Crescent Society Media Director Raed Elnams addressing Reporters Sunday.
These are considered crimes against humanity and war crimes. The international community must intervene to stop and compel Israel to respect international conventions and the rules of international humanitarian law, which prohibit the targeting of providers of health services and ambulances during war and conflict.
For more, we're joined by Diana Bhutu, longtime Palestinian human rights attorney, former advisor to the negotiating team of the Palestine Liberation Organization. She has a new piece in Zateo headlined Point Blank Range, How Israel Executed 15 Medics and Rescue Workers in Gaza. Diana, welcome back to Democracy Now! Thanks for joining us from Haifa. If you can start off by giving us the chronology of what happened to the medics and the paramedics and the ambulance drivers, and what Israel first said, and then when the footage was taken from the cell phone of a dead paramedic, what then Israel has responded.
Well, what we know, Amy, is that the Israeli army attacked an area in Rafah, a neighborhood in Rafah, Tel el-Sultan. And as has been the case over the course of the past year and a half, today marks a year and a half of this genocide, paramedics, Palestinian paramedics, went out to try to rescue people who were there, as well as to try to give them some medical services. As has been the case from the beginning, the paramedics notified and gave word that they were heading out. They had their lights on, as they've always had their lights on. And nonetheless, what we do know is that the Israeli army then attacked the ambulances that were going there. Not just attacked these ambulances, but then shot at these individuals point blank range. Many of them were actually found with their hands and their feet bound, and several of them were found with more than 20 gunshot wounds to the head and to the chest. To make matters then worse, we then have a group of soldiers who then decide that they're going to bury these ambulances. And so they dug up a mass grave and buried the ambulances in this mass grave. It took several days to be able to find these paramedics because they had gone missing and nobody was able to find them before people were then able to uncover them and the ambulances. Now, of course, as is always the case, Israel always claims that, oops, we didn't do it. Then they deflect and say, oh, it happened to be somebody who was wanted. And of course, both of these are against the rules of international law. But then only when it became clear that there was footage of that the paramedics had done everything right, that we now hear that the Israelis are now claiming that they buried the ambulance, get this, Amy, in order to prevent the people from being eaten by wild animals. In other words, what they have done time and again is be able to get away with point blank executions, with carrying out digging up mass graves and committing these war crimes. And all that they have to say time and again is, oops, sorry. And nobody is holding them to account. We now have over 409 medics who have been killed by Israel over the course of the past 18 months. There have been scores who are still remaining in prison, many of them being tortured. All of these are attacks against the medical system, and this is deliberate, and it's happening because nobody is stopping Israel.
I mean, It's very interesting that the Times of Israel said that the army defended burying the bodies in an unmarked grave, claiming this is an approved and regular practice during fighting in Gaza, and as you pointed out, to prevent the animals. But it's a standard practice to bury people in graves. And that why the ambulances buried all evidence they tried to cover up?
Yes, and this is the problem, Amy, is that you have to think about the levels of criminality, the level of dehumanization that it takes for not just one, but several of these soldiers to be able to think through and say, one, we're going to shoot at ambulances. Two, we're going to tie them up. Three, we're going to execute them. And then four, we're going to bury them as well as the ambulances. It's such the height of dehumanization. And because nobody's holding Israel to account, they continue to get away with it.
Why is Prime Minister Netanyahu in Washington today for a second time? He talked about where he's going to be talking about tariffs on Israel and other issues. But why do you think?
I think it's for two reasons. One is I think he's trying to get even more weapons to be sent to Israel. And second is I think he really wants to cement the Trump plan of ethnic cleansing, this plan that was unveiled back in January of this year. And I say this because Netanyahu has made it clear since he broke the ceasefire on March the 18th, precisely what it is that he wants to do. He's been saying time and again that he intends to go after all of Gaza, and he's made it clear that he's been doing so, but that he intends to implement the Trump plan. And so I think he's looking for additional backing by this administration in order to carry out this plan. And the only way that he will be able to ethnically cleanse 2 million people from the Gaza Strip is through the use of mass weaponry and through the pressure, the diplomatic pressure that the United States will undoubtedly bring to bear against Palestinians and, of course, against the rest of the Arab world. It's clear what Netanyahu wants to do. The question becomes whether anybody is going to stop him.
I wanted to get your response, Diana Bhutu, to what happened overnight. Israel striking a tent housing journalists near Nasser Hospital in Khan Yunis. The video is horrifying. The blast sets up this fire, and you see a journalist, Helmi Al-Fakhawi, who's sitting in a chair burning alive as other journalists try to rescue him. Another journalist was seriously wounded in the attack. This was a tent of journalists. Your response?
What Israel's been trying to do is to kill anybody who's continuing to bear witness and to bring to light Israel's crimes. This is why we've now seen that this is 211 journalists that Israel has killed. More journalists have been killed in Gaza than in any other place around the world. This is why they're going after medics. This is why they're going after the United Nations. This is why they're going after individual civilians as well, is that they want to make sure that they continue to carry out this genocide without anybody reporting on it. And the fact that we haven't seen global outrage over this mass killing of journalists and the mass killing of medics and of UN workers and so on just shows the height of dehumanization. It's high time that people wake up and realize that Israel's doing this for a reason, and they continue to get away with it because nobody is stopping them.
I want to also ask you about what happened in the occupied West Bank, Israeli soldiers shooting dead a 14-year-old Palestinian-American boy named Omar Mohammed Rabia during a raid of the town of Termessaya. Two other Palestinian-American boys, 14 and 15, were injured. The Palestinian Foreign Ministry condemned what it called the extrajudicial killing. Israel acknowledged shooting the boys. They accused them of rock throwing. Diana Bhutu.
Yeah. Yes, this is, again, another example, Amy, of the levels of dehumanization and the fact that Israeli soldiers are given orders of shoot to kill. I don't think that that we should be living in a world in which 13, 14, 15-year-old children are condemned to death because they're trying to resist military occupation through a stone. And yet these are the instructions and the orders that the Israeli army has given to its soldiers, which is shoot and kill, and we will then provide cover for you forever. This is why we've never seen any Israeli soldiers be held to account for the killings of children, for the killings of journalists, for the killings of medics, and so on.
And then you have the situation of health officials saying 600,000 children in Gaza are at risk of permanent paralysis because Israel's barring the entry of polio vaccines to Gaza as part of its broader overall blockade. And according to UNRWA, Israeli attacks have killed or injured 100 children a day since Israel broke the ceasefire. Deanna Boutu, there